This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Who's on Second? Episode number 16, Everybody's Sister. Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and this is Who's on Second, a podcast about educators and nonprofits who have jacked into the online 3D community called Second Life. This time out, the People's Linden speaks up. Jessica Linden, Jessica Sigalski in real life, is a Second Life community developer. That means she's an avatar advocate fighting for good user experience, tools, and training as Second Life creaks and copes with the strains of 30% growth month to month. And it's taken me months to finally get her on the other end of a Skype line for what turned out to be a wonderfully frank discussion about Second Life's problems, shortcomings, challenges, and opportunities. She joined me from Linden Labs offices in San Francisco, California, a few days before her company introduced Voice to the grid. Jessica, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome.
I wanted to start off by talking about Voice because I got an email from you inviting me to a beta for the Voice stuff that's coming from Vivox, I guess, in Second Life. So can you talk a bit about how you see that being used, especially by nonprofits and educators?
Oh, sure. Voice and Second Life, it's actually a really great project that brought together two different VoIP software companies, Vivox and Diamondware, and Second Life to provide... I think it's a really innovative way for people to communicate within the Second Life environment. It's spatial, so if I'm standing in front of you, I can hear people to the side and to the front and back, which really provides a sense of space. I've tested this already, and it really provides a sense of space and adds a new layer of information to the Second Life interaction.
Okay, cool.
And for nonprofits, I mean, it's sort of an obvious way to reduce your, you know, travel budget. If you can have a face-to-face meeting with someone in Second Life and incorporate, you know, voice, text, maybe your presentation via some sort of PowerPoint presentation in World. I mean, there's a lot less barriers to entry, I think, for people when there's other means of communication.
And when do you think I think it's the end of March. It's going to be in beta for everybody. Is that right?
Yeah, we're doing a limited beta test, and it's actually starting this week. And then after that, we will open up to the larger community to beta test. We really want to do this. We really want to do this right and make sure everyone gets a good chance to test it before we roll it out to the whole grid.
Cool. Now, that brings up something that I brought up in my last podcast in relation to adding new stuff. I would feel more enthusiastic about voice coming to Second Life if it just 5 minutes ago didn't take me about 5 minutes to log into Second Life. You know, I'm feeling right now like the technology is a bit broken. And so the thought of adding a really complicated broadband application on top of something that's not working very well doesn't make me real happy right now.
Okay, so the great thing about the voice is that it didn't take anyone away from Linden Lab development. We actually worked with two external groups who provide voice in a general sense to the world via the internet to also add it to Second Life. So it hasn't been something that's detracting from scaling Second Life. I mean, we're still probably 80 or 90% of us are working on scaling, of the developers are working on scaling Second Life. So it's more of continuing to add to the product while we're also scaling it. It's not taking away. It's not an either or sort of thing.
But doesn't it, I mean, it's a bandwidth requirement though.
It runs alongside. So it's like right now, if you were in Second Life and we were talking on Skype,
okay,
it's more of a running alongside. But instead of having to say, oh, Jessica, what is your Skype name? I know you in Second Life, but I need to talk to you in voice. Instead of doing that, it's already there. I already know your Skype name. I know your Second Life name. It removes some of the barriers, I think, to having that type of communication.
So it's running in parallel, but it's not going to...
It doesn't run through our servers or anything.
Right, so it's not going to be a performance hit on the grid.
It shouldn't affect it at all.
Okay. Now, I also wanted to touch on something else I was talking about last week, which was the sort of new user experience. And I was saying last week I just helped a bunch of people come into Second Life. And you're welcome, but by and large, their experience wasn't very good as a new user, that things didn't work the way they were supposed to. They couldn't log in. They couldn't figure out how to do things. And it was generally pretty, you know, honestly, it was a pretty crummy experience for them. And and what I found after I did that podcast last week, as I got email from a lot of people sort of agreeing that one of the first things they do when a friend comes into Second Life is get them the hell away from Orientation Island as fast as they can. And give them their own orientation to introduce them to the experience. So can you talk about what you're going to be doing to sort of improve that new user experience?
So we just rolled out a new Orientation Island, and I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but it is vastly improved experience from the previous version, which, as I'm sure you know, was pretty much the same since we launched. Mm-hmm. So this is a vastly improved experience. We try to introduce things that are more in tune with what I think people or what we think people are doing in world. So it's how to buy stuff out of a vendor instead of just from an object, because most people in world, when they purchase objects, they purchase it from a vendor, which is a tricky concept if you don't understand how it works already, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, we found over the last few years, and I've worked a lot with the new user experience, and we've continually learned that the faster we can get Second Life residents to helpful people, the better they are. So, it's Second Life is such a complex idea, and the learning curve is pretty high. The interface is, leaves much to be desired, and we'll admit it. So we know that the faster we can get, people to helpful people who can explain things, the better experience they're going to have. So when you say the first thing you do is get them off the Orientation Island and talk to them in a different way, of course, I agree with that. So my sort of goal is to build in more tools to make that easier. So the Reg API, for example, is one way where people can, really customize their own experience. So you go to your website, it's, waynesecondlife.com, and someone clicks on a button and says, join me at Wayneland, and they end up logged in directly to your parcel where you provide the sort of experience that's targeted towards the people who are interested in Wayneland.
Right.
I think that's one way that we'll really help sort of customize the Second Life experience for different groups of people.
And what organizations are making use of that now?
Well, the L Word has been using it. That's the television show on Showtime. I think Ajay Chung has been using it. NBC used it, I believe, when they did their tree lighting. So it's good for both one-off events where you just want to get, you don't really care as much about the overall Second Life experience. You just want to go see the tree lighting. So you log in and you go right to the tree lighting. Or you log in, you're part of the L Word community and you're already invested in that community online, and you log in directly to their orientation, and it's very focused towards their community. Mm-hmm. So I hope we'll see more of that, because I think they're providing a different and better experience for those targeted communities. I mean, we of course want to improve the default experience for everyone as well.
Cool. Now, it strikes me that with the move towards open source, you're going to get more and more of what you were just talking about, that you don't care about the Second Life experience overall, you want to go to the tree lighting. That when I look at things that are coming along, like the Sleek interface that allows you to sort of instant message without actually being in world and stuff like that, it's really creating a multiplicity of Second Life experiences, which is really different than the way it used to be, I think, right?
Right. Well, it's different than how it's been in actuality, but I think it's always been something that we've wanted to do. I mean, I think it's always been the path that Linen Lab has wanted to point towards, is we want it to be as open as possible. We want people to have as custom an experience as possible. We want to be a platform. We are a platform where you can do whatever you want. Right. Within this virtual space. And I think open source is just a no-brainer at that point. If that's your goal, then of course you need open source, because there are more people out in the world than there are Lindens.
Right.
So, and there are more passionate people who are excited about different things. And, we're really interested in scaling the databases, making sure that, these sort of core systems will continue to provide, service for everybody. And, we haven't done as much work on the viewer and the user interface as we'd like to. And we haven't been able to fix every single, minute thing that people think might be better for their one particular, usage. So the more that we can get open source community involved to fix those bugs and quickly help us figure out different ways to do UI and offer those to the community, I mean, the faster we're going to grow, the better the experience is for everyone else. It just makes sense.
Now, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things you said. First of all, the scaling issue that, the last couple of weeks particularly, I feel like in Second Life, I'm walking around on very thin ice. And I worry about the ability for Second Life to scale. Where's your head at on that?
I think, the community has been growing about 30% a month, I believe, which is huge for any software any community socially, but any software to scale that quickly. It's a challenge for sure. And we've been taking it very seriously. Like I said, we spend most of our developer resources are invested in scaling and figuring out problems. And it's not just the short term oh, concurrency is rising really quickly. We need to have some alternate plans in case it gets too high. It's also, you know, what happens on the, you know, 3-month scaling questions? What about the 6-month to a year scaling questions? So we have different teams on each of those problems so that we don't get, you know, backed up at any one point.
Right.
So it's definitely something we take really seriously. We know that it's frustrating when you can't log in. It's frustrating when I can't log in. I don't have any special, you know, Linden only line. I have to wait with everybody else. And right. I know how frustrating that is, especially when you have something you need to do. You know, I use Second Life for work too. So I understand that problem very clearly when you have something you need to be doing and it's for work and it's important and you can't get there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we want to fix that.
Okay. And are you confident that you actually can fix it, that you can scale?
I think we have a lot of really smart people working on the problem. It's just a matter of time. And when you're growing at 30% a month, you have to keep in front of it. You know, you have to keep in front of the train. So it's challenging, but I think we can do it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the other thing that you touched on was the idea of doing whatever you want to do in Second Life and creating experiences and stuff. And sure. I just wanted to talk to you about something that years ago, a friend of mine and I were talking about the internet, and he had what I thought was a wonderful metaphor. He said, "You remember, Wayne, when microwaves first came out and we used to use them to make scrambled eggs and heat up muffins and meat dinner and cook chickens and everything. And then we sort of figured out that really microwaves aren't really good at all those things. And what they're really good for is heating up soup and coffee. And that's what we use them for now, right? So we sort of scaled our expectations and anticipation about what that technology is good for and honed in on the thing that it's really good for. And I guess my question to you is, what's Second Life really good for?
That's a really good question. And I think of the internet. You know, when the internet first launched, everyone ran to the internet and wanted to sell you pet food. They wanted to sell you these ridiculous things that just weren't really appropriate. But then, you know, some time passed and people figured out that there were really, you know, a lot of things that the internet was good for helping people do, you know, helping people communicate, helping people, you know, work in a team across great distances, selling things that are sort of deep in the catalog and you know, the long tail sort of idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of different things the internet is good for. And, you know, I see Second Life as an extension of the internet. I see it as sort of what the internet looks like in 10 years, maybe, is an all 3D virtual, you know, you interact with things. I actually believe that. And, you know, I see when the internet first came on, people would put up their homepage and they would try to sell everything and everyone thought they had to be online. And maybe, you know, there's some of that sort of, you know, frontierism in the virtual space in Second Life. But I think that there's a lot of things Second Life is good for. I mean, you know, we can go back to nonprofits, advocacy. You know, I knew about Darfur before I saw Camp Darfur in Second Life, but wow, it was way more powerful to sit around a campfire with people and to sort of have that, you know, 3D experience of what was going on there in a very small way, right? In a very sort of, I mean, it's still artificial, but it allows you to add another layer of understanding, another layer of emotional sort of understanding to things that you might not know much about or might not be familiar with. And in the same way, you know, allowing expression, you know, expression of self within a 3D space. I mean, within Second Life, you have clothing, you have, you know, how I chose to do my hair, how I chose to, you know, everything is a very conscious decision and how I'm presenting myself. So you can really pull a lot out of that and, you know, how I'm trying to express my identity, you know, what I'm trying to do. And I think that's another thing that's really, you know, self-expression is huge. I don't think self-expression is ever going to go, you know, out of style.
Well, let's take another example, because I was thinking about this yesterday, because I was looking around Parvenu Towers, for example. Mm-hmm. And when you really sort of stand back from that, and I think it's, you know, it's a lovely building and stuff, but when you really stand back from that and look at the information architecture of it and the UI of it, it's mm-hmm. really a hierarchical list of resources that could have been created on a single or maybe 6 or 7 web pages. Right. And I'm not sure I navigated up and down through it and teleported from room to room and looked around and stuff. But I thought, man, this is a lot of stuff to go through to do what is very basic hypertext links to web resources.
Mm-hmm. Right? Were you by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. I always wonder what the experience would have been like if you had 3 or 4 other people, if it would be more interesting. That's the other thing I find really sort of you know, unique to Second Life is, you know, I can read a website and there might be 100 other people reading that website at the same time, but it, you know, so far attempts to allow me to interact with those people have been really clunky. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, when I went to the tree lighting event that NBC did, there were 100 people around me. And I was having this shared experience where I'm skating in New York City in front of the, you know, the huge tree. And that it's that shared experience that was really interesting to me.
Well, I guess that comes down to, what we're talking about is that there's some things, the sort of social networking aspects of Second Life, that it's good at. I'm not convinced that something like Parvenu Towers is what Second Life is good at, because it really seems to me to be a cumbersome interface for hypertextual links. And I'm not sure that that's the best way to make use of Second Life. That's the point I'm making, I guess.
Right. I mean, everyone's Second Life could be, I mean, what's interesting to you might not be interesting to someone else as well. That's always the other thing. That's, you know, the internet is so big and there's so much stuff going on and not everything do I understand at all. But also, you know, there are certain things that are better, that Second Life is better at presenting, of course, like the simulations. I don't know if you've seen the NOAA sort of weather simulations and all that sort of, like, that to me seems like we're getting a lot closer to that sort of, where you point at and go, oh, that's what Second Life is meant for. This is this beautiful build where I really understand things and I'm learning and it's fun and I'm with other people and that's being taken advantage of. I think we've gotten close. I've seen some really good examples of that. Like the Relay for Life event. What a great event for Second Life, right? Mm-hmm. They made like $40,000 in one weekend or throughout the course of their events, and 1,000 people came together from all over the world to build something together, first of all, and then have this experience where they're, you know, this really emotional topic. I mean, cancer hits just about everybody in some way. And come together to you know, this is community building at its finest. This is a society expressing itself and you know, giving back. And it wouldn't have been possible in that way. You know, you couldn't have walked by Mexico, New York, Paris, South Africa in the real world in one day, right? It's just not physical possibility with all of your friends who are also all over the world. So it's this really unique space for events like that. And I think that's getting closer to what Second Life is really good at.
That's interesting. So how do you said that you imagine that this is what the web is going to be like. You're not suggesting that Second Life or some other 3D online community is going to replace the web, I imagine.
I don't know about replace. I see it more as kind of an evolution type thing. I mean, there might be things that plain text on a browser is better for. Just like right now, I still use, you know, a text document instead of an HTML document. I don't think things completely go away. I think they just get added to and kind of grow and morph organically.
And how would you like to see Second Life morph organically over the next 5 years? Where do you see it going?
I'd love to see more avatar expression. I know it's another feature and it has nothing to do with scaling. Given that scaling will happen, I would love to see way more expressive avatars. So the puppeteering work that Jeffrey Ventrella has been doing, or, you know, what if we had animals? Actual animals, not animals that are sort of using the human body shape and playing with that, but an actual animal avatar. So I could go run around and be a cheetah or a giraffe or something, or, you know, just more play with the avatar and more expression. That's the side of Second Life I really like to see improved.
Great. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today, Jessica, and thank you for being an advocate for us in Second Life, and I look forward to seeing what comes in the next couple of weeks and couple of years.
Well, thank you so much, Wayne.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's it for this episode of Who's on Second. My thanks to Jessica for her frankness. If you'd like more information about Linden Lab, you can find it at lindenlab.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. Last week's podcast got the most response of any so far. Thanks to everyone who sent me encouraging feedback. It's great to know so many of you are listening. If you're part of an educational or nonprofit group doing cool stuff in Second Life and would like to be featured in this podcast, or if you just have some more show feedback, please drop me a line at wmcphail@gmail.com. Feel free to send me an audio comment at the same email address. In real life, I run a company called Wait and See. I help nonprofits and educators with emerging technology like Second Life. You can find a link to my company site, w8andc.com, in the show notes. Let me know if I can be of service. I'm Wayne McPhail, medium Helvetic in Second Life. Drop by if you're in game. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.